Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green at the control panels as always, and today we're having a conversation about how to create a winning team. I think all of us understand the importance of having a great team if we're going to achieve our practice goals and set our practice up to go from profitable to scalable. The leverage point that comes from transitioning from a profitable practice, which is essentially having a job, to transitioning to a scalable practice or a true business is one where we have leverage through systems and team. And when it comes to talking to practice owners all the time, the number one complaint I hear all the time is I can't seem to get my team operating at the highest possible level. We all understand the idea of it. We all understand the importance of it. And we're all committed to it. But sometimes we just need a couple of practical steps, a bit of step-by-step, do this, do that, in order to take our team to the next level. So in this particular podcast, I wanted to share some thoughts with you about how you can create a great team for your practice so that you can create that leverage through team, through systems, and ultimately transition from a profitable practice to a scalable practice. Now, even if you want to stay as a profitable practice, one where you're essentially self-employed, having a great team around you is going to allow you to focus on the things that you do best. And that is either clinical dentistry, if you want to stay hands-on, or to do the things you don't want to do, such as clinical dentistry, if you want to be more hands-off. So in any event, having a great team is really important. So when it comes to building a great team, I like to refer to a matrix that I call the performance culture matrix. And the performance culture matrix is a grid. It's a 2x2 grid, much like a dental quadrants. And so on the vertical axis, we would have performance. And on the horizontal axis, we would have culture fit. So in the top right-hand quadrant, we would have an A player. An A player who is someone who's a great performer in their role. Yeah, they're very technically competent. They can do the job really, really well to a high standard. And in addition to that, they're a tremendous culture fit. In other words, they get us, they know us, they like us, they're on board with what we're trying to do. They're all about that as well. In the bottom right-hand quadrant, we've got the B player. And a B player is someone who's a great culture fit, but in terms of their role in the practice, there's some skills to develop. There's some training to be done. And a B player could be someone who's either new to the practice or it could be someone in a new role. So just as an example, you might have a person on your team who as a dental assistant is an absolutely fantastic dental assistant and they're an A player. But if you move them into a reception role, because they're unfamiliar with that role, they might temporarily be a B player as they go about the process of developing those skills. Now, in the top left-hand quadrant is the C player. And a C player is someone who's technically proficient, they're quite competent at their role, but they're not a great culture fit. And these are the types of people in our practice that give the owners the biggest headaches. They're the ones that we tend to lose sleep over because we sometimes tolerate things from them that we ought not to because we're worried about losing a particular skill set. And for these particular players, we really need to try and encourage them to become a culture fit, which you know can be done and it requires coaching and conversations. But if that doesn't occur, then there's a risk that their performance suffers and they ultimately become a D player, which is a person who's neither a culture fit nor particularly good in terms of performance. And with a D player, we ultimately want to move them out of the practice. And of course, remembering that these types of descriptions do not imply anything about whether these people are nice people or otherwise, it's about fit. And so whether the role and the practice is the right fit for them and they're the right fit for us. So let's talk a little bit about this because ultimately to create a winning team, what we want to do is we want to have as many A players and B players on our team as possible. Obviously more A's than B's, but we want to make sure that culture fit is really, really aligned. So I wanted to give you a couple of thoughts about how to create a great team. So one of the things I'd really like to start with is to get some clarity around your organizational structure. An organizational structure, it sounds like something you might see in a large corporation. And certainly when I was in the Navy as a dentist, There are organizational structures here, there, and everywhere. But an organizational structure is really useful for a dental practice for a couple of reasons. One is it allows you to map out the structure of your existing practice. And as you map out your future growth plans, it allows you to foresee and to foreshadow what roles are going to need to be recruited for in what particular sequence. It's also really important because as you map the roles to the organizational chart, as compared to the individual people to start with, it's really critical to see we've got one or two dental assistants, maybe a receptionist or whatever the case may be. Where are we going to go next? Do we need another DA? Do we need another front desk person? So on and so forth. So it's very useful for workforce planning. But in addition to that organizational structure, what we need to have for each role is a very clear outline of a position description. We need to have very clear metrics for success. So that could be key performance indicators, what sort of critical drivers a person might need to observe in their particular role. We need to make sure we have a training and onboarding process for each of those roles so that if we bring a new dental assistant on, we know how to bring them up to speed quickly and easily and very effectively. And equally, we need to have methods for communicating when things get off track. So in terms of performance management and so on and so forth. But for each role, we need to make sure we have a position description, metrics for success, and onboarding and training documents. And that really represents some intellectual property assets of the practice. It means that you're going to be able to bring people up to speed more quickly and keep your productivity at a high level, which of course flows through to the bottom line and profitability of the business. So again, really, really important. But another thing that an org chart is really useful for is it understands or highlights where there's key person risk. It's really important that as you go through your practice, you identify where that key person risk is, and then we start to build in understudies for those roles where there's a lot of information and a lot of knowledge built into one particular role or into one particular person. So the way that we mitigate that risk is firstly, we try and get that knowledge out of that person's head, in terms of documenting systems, processes, and how things are done at the practice. But then we also want to adopt the Noah's Ark principle, a 2x2 situation, so that for every mission critical role in the practice, we have at least two people who can fulfill that role at a pretty good level. So again, really, really important that that gets done. So that org chart is critically important. Now, the number one mistake that I see people make when it comes to an organizational chart is they start thinking about roles in terms of individual people. That's Mary's role, that's Bob's role, that's Susie's role, and so on and so forth. And I want to encourage you to think beyond the individual people and to think of the role description, your dental assistant role, hygienist role, reception role, and so on. So when I was in the Navy, as an example of this, each of the roles in the Navy used to have what was referred to as a billet number. And each role on the organizational structure would have this billet number, and different people would post into and out of that particular position. And that billet number had all the things that I was mentioning to you. It had a position description. It had key performance indicators. All of those sorts of things were really critical because those things were what moved the organization forward. So again, really, really important to understand what that looks like in terms of your practice and also mapping to the future as well. So from there, let's talk a little bit about recruitment. We all understand that recruitment of ideal staff and ideal team members can be a challenge from time to time. Certainly where I live, the recruitment process can be challenging because we're competing with government. But that's the same for many other locations, but for different reasons. So we need to have a systematic and a methodical approach to recruitment. And I've got a particular recruitment checklist that I follow. And typically what I'm doing when I'm looking to recruit a role, I refer back to my organizational structure that I just mentioned. I go back to my position descriptions to make sure it's up to date. I'm clear about the tasks, the accountabilities, the responsibilities, and the ideal applicant avatar for that particular role. I'm looking at, have I budgeted cash flow for that particular role? Can the business afford the wage increase? Can we offset that wage increase with additional productivity? From there, I'm going to create and place an advertisement. And this is why it's really critical to have a good picture of your ideal applicant avatar. If you're clear about who the ideal applicant is for your particular role, now maybe it's an avatar, maybe it's a talent map, whatever process you like to do, you can create a compelling advertisement. And because recruiting great people is effectively marketing, we need to make sure that the ad that we write speaks to our ideal applicant. And that means we need to understand exactly what they're looking for in a role. We need to understand what sort of frustrations they might have experienced in their existing roles or past roles. We need to understand what their hopes and aspirations are for the future so that we can talk about those in our advertisement. It's also really important to understand that the language that we use is marketing or sales copy. And so when we look to create an ad, we need it to pop off the page. Interestingly, when I go through the listings for jobs on various websites in Australia, it might be Seek or otherwise, if you're in a different country, what I noticed is all the ads are variations of the same theme. They're quite bland, they're quite vanilla, there's nothing much that stands out. And so it's important that we understand the concept of marketing for team members. We're all familiar with the idea of marketing for patients, but some of us are yet to make that leap and think about marketing for team members, and that's exactly what we want to do. So once we've created a compelling advertisement based on our ideal applicant avatar, we place it, and then once the applications come through, we need to be able to sort and vet those applications, see who's going to be a fit and see who's not. From there, we would conduct an initial interview, and whether you do that in person or on the telephone is really up to you. We've got other episodes in the podcast that show how to do that, but we need to have that initial interview. We're trying to assess whether this person's going to be a great fit for the team. Are they going to be able to work with the others? Do they have the requisite skills? Can we do a skills test for them? Can we ask those questions about values, ask them to describe what a value means to them? And equally, if we paint a vision for our practice, how are they going to be able to support the practice to bring that vision to life? What are they bringing to the table? And so, of course, once we've gone through that initial interview, we might then go back for a second interview. And we use a process when we've got a really great applicant sitting across the table from us. We use a process called the magnetic job offer, and it's a framework that I wrote, which is all about making sure that we can pitch to the best talent possible and put the odds in our favor that they're going to take the job. And really what that means is there's a little bit of marketing, there's a little bit of psychology, there's a little bit of selling involved so that we can bring that person into our practice and make sure that they remain happy in our practice and contribute to the overall practice growth and of course, enjoyment of the practice. And so what that magnetic job offer looks like, it's about understanding what's driving that applicant's behavior, what it is that they really want from a role, and crafting a job that's going to meet those needs. So just as an example, some time ago, I was helping a client with this, and he was based in a regional town, and this particular applicant was great, and we needed her to relocate from a major capital city to this regional area. So we did a little bit of Facebook research. In other words, we checked out her Facebook profile and we noticed that this particular applicant spent a lot of time with her family. In fact, every photo was of her and her family. So we realized that we would probably need to provide an opportunity for her to go back and stay connected to her family and social networks. So as we were pitching the job to her, we specifically said, look, we understand that moving from this major metropolitan area to this particular town is probably going to involve some social dislocation. So would it be reasonable to assume that we need to provide a method for you to get back to that city fairly regularly so that you can stay in close contact? And of course, she said yes. And we knew that because we'd done the research. And what that meant is we needed to be flexible with rostering. We needed to make sure she wasn't working every Saturday. We needed to make sure that she had the opportunity outside of some of those things to get back and stay connected with her family. So again, we need to have a process for being able to pitch to great talent so that when they're sitting across the table from us, we can effectively bring them into our practice because these great candidates have options aplenty. And we need to make sure our practice stands head and shoulders above the other jobs that they're going for. So the magnetic job offer is really a great tool. And if you're a Savvy Dentist Academy member, that's in the academy there for you. So that's really key. Now, once we've gone through that, of course, we still need to do our due diligence. We need to do the reference checks. We need to check the registration if they are a dental professional, dentist, hygienist, therapist, and so on. We need to check with the relevant registration authority. And from there, we need to be able to put together a formal job offer. And that would typically involve a letter of offer and a contract. Now, if you're working whatever type of practice, you'd have some sort of contract. Perhaps you'll have a service facility agreement or even an enterprise agreement. But in any event, you need to have some form of written documentation to support the role. In that, I would be including the position description, I'd be including the key performance indicators, and so on. So let's assume now that that particular person accepts our role. Our job now becomes one of getting that new person on our team up to speed as quickly as possible. And it's a bit like an on-ramp onto the freeway. So we need to have a really robust onboarding process. And the onboarding process is helped by making sure that you have an onboarding handbook, by making sure that you have an onboarding process, and that you have a buddy system so that person is supported and has their hand held throughout the first week or two or three or even month of them being at the practice. Now, in addition to that onboarding, we need to provide some training. And that training is the opportunity to, again, make sure that we can elevate their skills, move them from a B player as close to an A player as quickly as possible, and get their skills at the highest possible level. So we need to have a really, again, systematic method for bringing a person up to speed and proficient in their role as it stands. So what that's going to look like is we're going to need to map out all the tasks that person needs to complete. We're going to need to break them into various groups. So if it's a clinician, we're going to need to break them into clinical tasks, administrative tasks, maybe documentation tasks, all those sorts of things, and make sure that there is proficiency demonstrated for each of these things. So typically what we would like to do is to make sure that in the first 4 weeks, all the mission critical things are done. All the things that are going to cause problems if they're not done are done as quickly as possible. So that means we need to make sure they're across infection control. We need to make sure they're across the workplace health and safety processes and procedures. All of those sorts of things are really, really critical. So again, if you go into the Savvy Dentist Academy, our onboarding workbook is in there, as is the training chart. But for your practice, you just need to create a document of your own. You need to make sure that you can bring people into your practice quickly, easily, and get them up to speed as quickly as possible from a culture fit perspective, as well as from a performance perspective. And that culture fit should really have been taken care of during the recruitment process, because we've used our questioning to make sure that whoever we bring in is a great culture fit. Once we have our team assembled, one of the things that we need to understand is that as the leaders of our business, if we're going to be moving from a profitable practice to a scalable practice, our role shifts. Our role shifts from being primarily the dentist who provides great care to patients all day to being the person who puts on their business owner's hat and who builds and leads great teams who provide great care to patients. Now, by doing that, those patients support the business, and in turn, the business supports us. So our role shifts. We become a coach in a way. We become a mentor. We become a builder of teams. And that means we need to be very clear about trying to get the most out of the people on our team. And that involves building out a personal improvement plan for each of our team members. And so typically what that would mean is looking at how things are going over a period of, say, 3 to 4 months, sitting down with that particular team member, mapping out some goals, understanding what resources need to be in place so that they can then take their skills to the next level. That particular process, the performance review process, is what we call a coaching conference, and it's really designed to help people take their performance to the next level. And so typically I might say to someone, Mary, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you think you've been traveling over the last few months? And she might say, been going at a 7. You say, great. So given that's a 7, Mary, what is it that's made you, score yourself in that way? And she'll say, well, I think I'm doing A, B, and C well, and I've got some room to improve in X, Y, Z. And I'd say, great, well, Mary, I also think you've been a 6 or a 7 or an 8, whatever I think it is. And I agree that you've done A, B, and C well. I'd really like to see you do X, Y, Z well as well. But in 3 or 4 months, what would you like to score yourself in 3 or 4 months? Is it an 8 or a 9? And she might say, I'd like to be an 8. And say, great. So based on what you've just told me, if we were to get X, Y, and Z done, would that help you get to an 8? Or is there more that needs to be done? Is there other things that need to be done to help you feel like you're performing at the level of an 8? And so by asking questions of that nature, it allows me to then get a better understanding of what success means for Mary, but also for me saying, I'd like you to be an 8 or a 9 as well. And for me, an 8 means doing A, B, C, X, Y, Z, whatever it happens to be, so that they can upskill in that area. So again, we need to have a personal improvement plan. And so it's really important to understand that as we bring people into our business, as I said a moment ago, that our role shifts. So we need to take on this coaching role. And one of the most commonly used coaching frameworks is a model called the GROW model, where G stands for goal, R stands for reality, O stands for the options, and W stands for the way forward. So we might say, look, if our goal is to be an 8 out of 10 and we're currently at a 7, you know, what are the options that we could explore to help you go from a 7 to an 8? And then we can list out all the different things. And then once we've got that list of things, we can say, okay, if we were to triage this list or prioritize this list, which ones of those do you think from your perspective are going to be the most important and most valuable? And Mary might list out the two or three things, and then I'll say, great. So from my perspective, I think these things are the most important. So again, that's just a really useful coaching model. I wanted to share that with you quickly so that you can take that into your practice. But that GROW model is a really important communication model. It's really useful, not just in building teams, by the way. It's really useful in working with your patients. So if we know what the patient's goals are for treatment, we know what the reality is, we can think about all the options, and then we can determine a way forward. It sounds a little bit like a pre-clinical interview or a fireside chat, an examination, and then a treatment differential diagnosis and a few treatment options, and then, of course, finally a treatment plan. So again, it's a very common model, and it's very, very useful. So again, just understanding that our role does shift, what we're really trying to achieve for all of the people on our team is a great place for them to work, where they come to work and they do work that they love, where they're really stimulated and feel like they're adding value to the people with whom they're interacting, where they're working with nice people, whether that's the other team members or indeed the patients themselves, and of course, helping them earn a living. Everyone needs to earn a living, and what I've found is that if you can align those three things where people are doing work that they love, that adds value to other people, allows them to work with nice people, and allows them to earn a living, then you're going to be able to build and lead a great team that stays. And of course, one of the things we all want is stability in our team. We want to make sure our team is with us for the long haul, because again, that means we're remaining productive, we're growing together, we're moving together. So I hope you find these practical tips helpful for you. I'd really encourage you to just take down some notes there. And please send me a little note. Let me know which one of those tips, one of those ideas or strategies you're going to take into your practice so that you can build a winning team for yourself. So that's it for me this week. I hope you all have a lovely week ahead. Look forward to seeing you soon, and take care for now. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.